Cricket on the Brain 24/7, 365. Well, every Monday, Corbin Middlemass and ex-test opener Ed Cowan join forces on the ABC Cricket Podcast.
And I watch him bat and I think it's like Brian Lara on steroids.
Featuring the best analysis and biggest results.
We're not better off trying to blood someone else in a series like this.
And the stories that have your cricket thread popping off.
So if I'm buying the Renegades, why would I want to purchase that?
ABC Cricket Podcast, every Monday on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Because there's no off-season in cricket.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's the most amazing thing to be a part of. And, you know, for myself, I'm obviously extremely proud to be here, and but as also as motivated as ever to contribute and to be a part of a group that, you know, creates another set of memories that will last, and, you know, more images that I want to see on the walls in this building, you know, that can be part of future generations' stories when they sit here and think about their own, you know, World Cup.
Socceroo Jackson Irvine, there aren't many athletes who speak better than the veteran, and it's kind of cool to hear him talking about creating more memories at this tournament as Australian fans ready for a vital clash with Paraguay. We want to understand what the Socceroos need to do to qualify for the next round. Plus, we're going to have to revel in the Cabo Verde Cinderella story, which just gets better and better. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. Daniel Garber's a football reporter with the ABC. He's at the World Cup as part of a super fans group, the Green and Gold Army. Half his luck. Garby, the dust has settled after the disappointment of the USA defeat. Can I just ask, though, from a fan point of view, what was that experience like in Seattle?
Absolutely fantastic. One of the great sporting experiences you can have, Stacky. Yeah, very lucky to be a travelling host and travelling MC for the Green and Gold Army over here. And we're 500 strong, so marching through the streets of Seattle before the game, even with a midday kickoff, the energy was unbelievable as, you know, the rest of the Aussie fans joined our march. We had power in numbers, that's for sure. I mean, it felt like we were the dominant fan group on the way in. Then you got into that stadium, one of the best stadiums I've ever been in my life. Maybe the best sports stadium I've been in, to be honest, Lumen Field, just out of this world. And then you realised, okay, we're outnumbered here. We are definitely against a host nation and a powerful one at that. But for a pure sporting experience, even with the result mixed in, it's one that will live long in the memory of the Aussies who were lucky enough to be there. Yeah, the game didn't go the way that we would have liked, especially that first half where the USA just overpowered us enormously. And there are selection decisions that obviously have been picked out, which we can discuss. But it was just absolutely incredible. And thankfully, we performed well in the second half to give ourselves something to be happy about. But overall, just incredible. And yeah, the USA fans are very strong in their numbers and their team is matching it on the field. They're a side to watch out for in a big way at this World Cup.
Just on the American fans, insufferable or actually all right?
No, they're fine, to be honest. I mean, they're a pretty soft supporter group, let's be honest. They are not the most intimidating when it comes to a football culture, the Americans. And that did definitely show in the stands. I mean, one of the funnier chants that came through was when we got a yellow card, they started singing, "You can't do that, you can't do that," which is the worst football chant I've ever heard in my entire life. But overall, they're pretty good. They were up and about when they won. I mean, they were singing as they walked out of the stadium, which I really liked. I mean, they were pumped to beat us and talking to their fans one-on-one. They have been gracious the whole way through, very complimentary about Australia, as have their players been. It's only the pundits that have been irking us throughout. But they've been great and they're very aware of how good of a side we are. So they were very happy with the victory and that was nice to hear.
The focus sharpens for Paraguay. Just on a simplistic level, what does Australia need to reach the next round?
Just a result, and second place is guaranteed. So a draw will do it for Australia, a win as well. A loss, and it's still possible that we can get through. In fact, it's still more than likely, considering the strong goal difference at this stage. But we don't want to flirt with that too much because a loss and things can turn. And also, the situation is very different based on finishing second and finishing third. So if we finish second, we play on July 3 against a far weaker opponent than if we finished third, which means the break between our final group stage game against Paraguay and our first knockout game is really long, around 10 days, which means you know, our players will get a really good rest. And we've got young players like Aaron Kunda and Toure where their conditioning is not superb, Volpato as well. That could be really handy. Finish third in the group, lose to Paraguay and finish third and still qualify. And we play on June 30. So it's a really quick turnaround of around 4 days. I think that is an enormous factor in all of this. So the mentality for Australia has to be to go and win, because you don't want to sit there at any stage being happy with the draw. They snatch a late goal and all of a sudden you finished in third, risk missing out and have a far different situation to work with and a far tougher one from third position in the group. So now the mentality has to be about finishing second, and a win or draw will do that for the Socceroos against Paraguay in Santa Clara.
The South Americans are favourites. Educate me on them. They're going to be missing their, maybe their best player. Why is that and how significant is that?
You're not sure they deserve to be favourites, to be honest. Miguel Almirón is out.
In a confrontational situation, a player may receive a red card.
Paraguay, cover his mouth. Decision is red card.
And it is a red card for covering his mouth in a confrontational situation. Miguel Almirón is sent off.
And Australia has been better than them so far in the tournament. You know, they were really poor against the USA. As we said, the Americans are looking really strong. But I didn't think their defence was any good shape at all. But they did well to hang on against Turkey. You know, maybe that's given them a bit of a boost. That game would have tired them out a fair bit as well. They pushed themselves really hard in that encounter and trying to, you know, play with 10 men so that they'll be exhausted after that. And, you know, I think Australia's got more players to rotate through. They'll be buoyed by the way in which we played in that second half against the United States. So I think Australia deserves to be favourites and we should feel pretty confident about getting the result that we need.
I'm intrigued to see what Tony Popovich might have in his kit bag. Yep. Big selections before each game. And it means this week is going to be a bit of a guessing game rolling on with Aussie fans. What struck you as the most obvious moves he might pull?
It's one of the most enjoyable parts of being at the World Cup is just every Australian you meet, that's all anyone wants to talk about, the team. The most interesting scenario for me is that, as we learnt very early in maths at primary school, 4 into 3 doesn't go. And we have right now 4 players who we all feel should be starting in attack for Australia, and that is Moturay, Nestor Irinkunda, Connor Metcalf, and Christian Volpato. But if the formation stays the same, which you can guarantee it will, you know, one of them has to miss out. So who's that going to be from the start? I mean, maybe you can play Connor Metcalf deeper in midfield where Paulo Konengsa plays, but then you're asking him to change position. And I'm not sure Tony Popovich will do that, but it is a possibility. So who misses out? I mean, if Toure's fit, got to lead the line. We'd love to see Irinkunda start. Metcalf was the selection blunder for me against the USA. I don't know why he was taken out of the lineup. He should have started. Irinkunda not starting against America, I was okay with. I think a lot of fans were, because he was never going to start all 3 games. And there was a risk that in that first half, as America were on the front foot, up against their brilliant fullbacks, he would have been tracking back all half, would have been exhausted, and he would have been wasted. The plan didn't work to bring him on in the second half because we were 2 goals down. But I understand the theory. So you'd like him to come back into the lineup. And then Volpato was absolutely superb.
Volpato, edge of the area, drops the shoulder, looking for the angle to pass or shoot. Good work. Volpato delivers a dangerous ball in the area.
It's hard to know who misses out. Maybe Volpato is used as an impact player again because his conditioning is not as great. If Toure's not fit, does Irinkunda start up front? Or does he leave out Metcalf? All of these things are up in the air. And to be honest, I don't think we'll know until the team sheet is sent out, because you know, Popper keeps those cards incredibly close to his chest and gives nothing away.
I was interested to see Irinkunda and the way he spoke in the aftermath, saying that the USA game was a massive focus for him and he wanted to start, but, you know, team first, etc. I just wanted to know, with the hype around him and his talent, dealing with being dropped, that's a new challenge in this kind of context. How do you think he's going to deal with that?
It's going to be interesting, because I was sitting on the side of the ground where the players walked off, and I'll be honest, it wasn't the best sight to see Nestor Irinkunda walk straight off the ground at the end of the game. Didn't go to shake anyone's hands, didn't clap the fans, didn't go towards any of his teammates. He was straight out down the race when the final whistle went. So he was disappointed. He still has that about him. He's still a little bit immature. He's still raw. And we know that. You know, we expected that coming into this World Cup. So it's not a great surprise, but you know, they're going to have to put an arm around him and work him back up a little again. And I'm sure they will. And they would have done that stuff straight after the game. They know what they're dealing with Nestori. But I'd like to see him come back into the starting lineup and have an impact again. I think he'll be fine. But he was definitely very upset after the game. But I think the way in which he spoke was fine. He was emotional, obviously, but honest. And of course he wanted to play and he was very disappointed. But at the same time, he realises that it was the best thing for the team. And as I said before, I think the theory did make sense. I get the argument completely that it might have put the USA on the back foot, having him there and giving them something to worry about and giving us a stronger outlet for sure. But there's also the chance that, you know, the game might have been tight and he would have just run himself into the ground in the first half and then he's not there for the second. So unfortunately, it didn't, you know, work out the way that the Socceroos coaching staff would have liked. And now he's got to just get ready to go again against Paraguay and hopefully he can rip it up once more.
Boss, Giacarte, Italiano, Suter, all on yellow cards. Another yellow will mean suspension in the following game.
Yep.
How's that going to impact their chances of selection? Feels like a tightrope to have all four of them running around out there.
Yeah, it does. Look, the mentality's got to be just focusing on getting the results. So you can't think too much about the next game. That being said, maybe you weigh up, you know, who's lacking a bit in terms of conditioning and who is not necessarily essential in the starting 11. And if your replacement comes in, they can do a job. Jason Guerry has looked pretty good when he's come on. So can he play right wing back for Jacob Italiano? You know, Kai Truen wouldn't surprise me if he gets a look in that position. So that's possible. You know, having two of your key defenders in Suter and Giacarte on yellow cards isn't ideal. And Lucas Harrington's pushing for a start. But if there's a defensive change to make, it's probably Harrington in for Cam Burgess, who didn't play well against the USA at all. That own goal, he never really recovered from it. So it'd be a surprise if Giacarte or Suter went out, especially Suter, who controls the defence supremely. Would love to see Jordy Boss go again because he didn't have a great game against the USA. He didn't have a true Jordy Boss game against Turkey either, but did some little things that were just so important and so impressive. Against the USA, he never really got into it and altered the game for us. So would love to see him play against Paraguay because we know how big of a talent he is. So hopefully he stays in the team, but there's a player there in Aziz Bajic who is obviously so reliable and so experienced, and maybe Popper can think about that.
Daniel Garb, appreciate you taking the time as you roll through this FIFA World Cup. Thanks so much.
Thanks, mate.
Nick Miller covers football for The Athletic and he has been following the incredible story that is Cabo Verde. Nick, a 2-2 draw against Uruguay. I mean, if the draw against tournament favourite Spain was the shock of the tournament, does this result cement this nation as the story of the World Cup for 2026 so far?
I mean, I think it definitely does, yeah. I mean, you could kind of write off, maybe try and write off the Spain result as a bit of a fluke. That, you know, the another day, two or three of those chances to go in, they didn't really threaten scoring a goal against Spain. But, you know, against Uruguay, they've scored twice, took the lead, obviously, in the first half pretty early on. And they proved that they're actually, you know, not just surviving, they're kind of competing at the tournament, which is just phenomenal.
Pina Blasic, oh, they've scored! Sensational from Cabo Verde! Their first ever goal at the World Cup finals! Kevin Pina has got it!
I was in Cape Verde for when they qualified back in October, I think it was, and the sort of joy of all the people there was just incredible. And that was at the point where they just thought they were going to be happy to be at the World Cup, never mind competing. So, yeah, this is the story of the tournament so far by a long way, I think.
You've reported specifically about their goalkeeper, Vizinha, who's gone from, I think, 45,000 Instagram followers to, last time I checked, somewhere in the vicinity of 15 million. What is the Vizinha story?
Well, I mean, he is the sort of emotional heart of the team. Him and a guy called Stopira, who I don't think has actually got on yet, who actually did retire and then was tempted back. But Virginia almost retired before the World Cup. They had this kind of slightly weird Africa Cup of Nations qualifying campaign where they played really badly and they didn't qualify. And this was while the World Cup qualification was going on. And Virginia had actually been dropped. He was out of the team. Another guy was in goal. So at that point, he was really seriously considering retiring. And basically, his teammates talked him out of it because they all love him so much. And he's such a, well, he's not the captain. He's a kind of very much a leader of the team. So, yeah, he's had this incredible story. He wasn't a professional until he was about 25, 26. He's had this career where he's played in lots of slightly unusual places. He's played in Angola. He's played in a few places in Europe. He's currently in the second tier in Portugal, which is where a few of the Cape Verde players play. But yeah, he's just a phenomenal story. He's one of the two players who's, I think this is their fifth major international tournament. They've played in four Africa Cup Nations before, and it's him and I think Ryan Mendes is the captain, is are the only two players that have been there for that whole run over the last sort of 10, 15 years or so. You know, while there are probably slightly better players in the team, he's very much the kind of emotional heart and the guy that kind of binds the squad together, really.
It tugged at the heartstrings to hear him speak about the fact his mum couldn't beat the opener, where he had that incredible player of the match performance due to visa issues. What do you think it means to the team, Virginia, kind of the story in general, the fact that she was very much in the stands cheering her son on today? It was beautiful scenes.
Yeah, I mean, when this story's obviously been progressing quite a lot. He said this in his post-match interview after the Spain game, and then, you know, it kind of progressed to various people getting involved to get her over to Miami for this game.
All my family always support me in everything, and to have she here for me, it's something special. My father also is here, my brother, so I am very happy.
And all the while this was going on, I was just thinking, she's gonna get over there and she's gonna be there when Uruguay beat them like 5-0 or something, and it's all gonna be a bit of a not an anticlimax, but it's gonna be a bit of a shame. But you know, while he wasn't the kind of the individual star in the same way against Uruguay that he was against Spain, just incredible that, you know, she was there for another astonishing result in Cape Verdean football history. I mean, the game that they qualified for the World Cup, they played Eswatini, that up until that point was the biggest game in their history, but now they've kind of added another couple.
There's been a little bit of grumbling about the fact that this tournament is in an expanded format, the event going from 32 to 48 teams. You know, they're currently Cabo Verde third in their group on goal difference. They have Saudi Arabia last. Who knows how high they might rise? Does this story kind of vindicate the expansion somewhat of this tournament?
Yeah, in some ways it does. I don't know, from a personal perspective, I was conceptually against the tournament partly because it does make it pretty straightforward to qualify for the next round. And you kind of think, well, that does sort of goes against the spirit of the World Cup. It's supposed to be the best teams in the world. You know, you're supposed to be able to do something more than just kind of sneak a win and then get through to the knockouts. But on the other hand, it's just impossible not to be kind of swept away with the emotions when teams like Cape Verde and also Curaçao. I mean, I was at the Curaçao-Germany game the other day, and, you know, Curaçao got beat 7-1. And if you just look at the kind of basic scoreline, you think, well, that's a waste of a space in the tournament then, you know. But just being there for the goal they scored was just this phenomenal moment.
There's Lucadia, and there's the strike, and there's the equaliser! Oh, unbelievable! Livano Comanencia! History in Houston!
In the kind of post-match interview area, after the game, all the players were walking through, and it was quite difficult to tell which team had been beaten 7-1 and which team had won 7-1 by the looks on the faces of all the players, because the Curaçao players were just all so joyous and delighted that they'd, you know, they're at a World Cup and they managed to score a goal against a team like Germany. So while you can kind of sit there and go, yeah, maybe there are some poorer teams at this World Cup and maybe it dilutes the quality and it kind of makes the thing a bit lopsided and it makes it much easier to qualify, all that kind of washes away when you see the kind of celebratory scenes by teams like Cape Verde and Curaçao.
Hard not to get swept away with it. Appreciate your time today, Nick. Enjoy the rest of the tournament.
No problem, you too.
Headlines. The All Whites had New Zealand fans extremely excited when they raced out to a 1-0 lead over Egypt, but the Africans fought back with 3 second half goals, including one to Mo Salah, as they finished 3-1 victors. Earlier, Belgium, a side who we always classify as a tournament dark horse, showed that they're maybe just regular horses, or even worse, as they copped a red card and drew nil all with Iran. That means Group G is currently Egypt, Iran, Belgium, New Zealand, as it currently stands. Australia would play Iran, and those who remember the World Cup qualifier heartbreak of 1997 at the MCG might have some thoughts about redemption on that front. Earlier, Spain recovered from their opening game draw with Cabo Verde to smash Saudi Arabia 4-0. Lamine Yamal opened his account for the tournament with a goal in the 10th minute. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to SBS and Andrew Hawkins on Twitter for the extra audio used in this episode.